I was just talking away. Hold on, let me fix my camera. Hi. My dog literally just pushed the door open and made her way in. Let me get her bed real quick. We took it out while I was teaching, and she's like frantic. Hold on.
I'll just put her in here with me, okay?
Burr, I love you. She changed her mind. She's gonna lay in front of the fireplace. How are you guys today? Can you guys hear me okay?
Yes,
Okay. How are
I'm
you?
good. I'm good,
Didn't sound extremely convincing.
Well, I'm just waiting to have a baby, that's all.
That's all. Hi, are you ready for your baby? Are you gonna have a baby? Are you gonna take care of the baby with mama? I don't think so. Oh my God, my roots are so bad. It's pathetic. I was gonna wear a hat and I was like, I was supposed to have an appointment the week before Fearless Birth, and I was so busy. And I don't know about you guys, but nail appointments and hair appointments take so much time that sometimes I'm like, I have to gear myself up. Look at these baby boys. How old are each of the boys?
I feel
Allison, how old is
22
he? Oh, go ahead. Sorry.
months.
22. They look almost the same age.
And he is 2 years and 2 months.
Very close. Wow. Alyssa, how far along are you?
I'll be 29 weeks on Wednesday.
So 28 and 5 you are?
What?
Are you 28 and 5 weeks then? I mean 28 and 5 days?
Yes.
Something like that.
Yep.
We always have you guys rename yourselves when you come in, kind of so Taylor and I, or Lene, whoever's hosting the happy hour, can kind of figure it out. You know, like it, especially if Allison asked a question about, you know, fetal movement, it would be a completely different answer for her.
No, don't touch.
Oh no, here comes Ruth. She's still pregnant.
No.
Hello, Miss Ruth.
You see another
Hi.
Hi. Hello. We're still pregnant.
Yes.
That's okay. Baby's brewing.
Right. Yeah. I've had the prodromal labor.
Did you find out about taking anything for sleep?
I did, but they kept waking me up through it too. So I didn't even bother last. I didn't bother to take one last night. And they are coming more stronger now. Like they are more painful. So I'm just there, like, okay. They're
Are
just not
they
consistent.
during the day or just at night they're more painful?
They start at night and then kind of continue. Like during the day is random, but for today, I've had it a bit more consistent compared to other days. So
Well, you know,
Jesus.
it's so hard. You're what, 40 weeks in one day?
Yes.
So, have you had a cervical exam?
I had one on Friday, this past Friday, yeah. And at
And
that
what'd they
one,
say?
I wasn't dilated. I was just, she said the cervix was soft and
Mid
mid
position?
or something, mid position,
Yeah.
yeah. But that was it. I haven't gone in to get checked again.
Stop.
Okay.
Stop. So I know we get caught up on dilation, but if you think about it, I'm trying to think of something that would make sense. Okay, let's think of it this way. You have to have a key. The key has to go into the slot and you have to turn it.
right,
for the car to start running. The cervix has to get soft. It has to thin out and has to move forward for it to start running. So you're doing those things. So we get so caught up with dilation that we forget to celebrate the wins. Your body is doing its thing to vaginally birth this baby. So yes. I want you telling it how wonderful it is and how proud you are of your body and how great it is that your cervix is coming forward, your cervix is soft. If your cervix isn't soft, it won't open.
Okay.
So if you went in there and like, yeah, I can get my finger in, you know, you're like 1 centimeter, but you're really thick. That's not good. It's better to be soft and closed than thick and a little open. The only reason open is okay, is good in one sense, is they can do a cervical sweep. But I would say with all that prodromal labor this weekend, you know, have you been doing the 30 minutes a day nipple stim?
No, I haven't.
All right. I have. Guess what? We're going to do
that.
That
today.
Tonight. Yeah. I want you to start it tonight when the lights are dim.
Okay.
Either that or do it in a dark room.
Okay.
But do you have a pump?
I do, yes.
Okay, so lowest setting, 15 minutes, 15 minutes. Yes. Allison, you can do that as well. 30 minutes a day, 15, 15. If you really want to make it more powerful, you do it in the dark. So melatonin is increasing because melatonin works really well to help bring up oxytocin. You want to create a really relaxing, like, you know, oxytocin is the love hormone. So think about, like, if you're feeling kind of like frisky with your partner and all hell's breaking loose, you're not feeling frisky anymore, right? So your oxytocin goes down. So you want to create a peaceful environment. So this might be, you know, it may be your partner out of the room. I don't know. Depends on the circumstances. You know what I mean? You may want to have your partner take, you know, nighttime duty. You put some candles or a diffuser, some music or a show you really like that makes you feel happy, and do the pumping for 30 minutes per day during that time. Maybe play your labor playlist, you know, that's, unless you're, some of my patients and some of my students, like one of my VBAC 2C students, had Missy Elliott on hers. For me, I feel like something that like is not going to create that calming environment.
Yeah.
So, you know, something really peaceful, like your go-to music that calms you and makes Ruth feel happy.
Okay.
So that's your assignment. Yes. Then you can have sex.
Yeah.
That can work. You're probably exhausted and you're like, I don't want to do any of this.
I was actually, like, I was checking Google about that, like, after the mucus plug and stuff, like, if it was still safe.
Yeah. Okay. Absolutely. Okay. Until your water breaks. If your water breaks, you should not have anything inside the vagina. I mean, even us doing cervical exams, they need to be limited once your water breaks. So,
okay.
Well, keep us posted.
Yes, for sure.
So I take off on Sundays. Have you been staying on top of your labor bat signal?
Yes, Taylor replied there, so
okay.
All the questions I had. Yeah,
I keep having this issue with my app. I go through and I finish them all. It looks like I have no notifications. Then I go out and then I come back and I have like 40 that say like 2 days old, and I'm like, what is happening right now?
It happens to me too. I don't know what's going on with the app.
I don't either. So what I have started doing is I just refresh the app a few times every time I go in it. So that, you know, I'll close it, open it, close it. It was kind of a pain in the booty, but I don't want to miss something. So we had quite a few babies in the last few days.
Well,
yeah. So, exciting. Well, let me check on everyone else. Do you have any other questions for me?
No, no other questions for now.
Okay. Yes. Hi, Grace. How are you? I'm going to have, if you don't mind editing your name. And the way you do that, if you guys don't know, is if you're on your desktop, hover over your name and there's three little dots, you can push rename. I really love to see weeks and days, or if you're postpartum, how many weeks postpartum. If you're on your phone, I believe you go to participants and then find your name and then rename.
Okay. That way
I can kind of know where you're at.
Yeah.
Has everybody been on the actual VBAC happy hour yet? Not FBE, this one. No? Sometimes I'm so familiar with some of your faces from last week that I'm like, am I blending? I don't know. I don't see much the week before Fearless Birth and the week during, especially when the men in my house were sick. They don't handle sickness well. My husband, I swear to God, he was so sick. He's like, I get over it really fast, as he's coughing all over the house. I'm like, cover your mouth. And he's 6'5". So when he coughs, it's everywhere. Anyway, I digress. All right. So Allison, tell us about your first birth. Tell us what brought you here.
Yeah. So with my son, I had hyperthyroidism that I found out right before I got pregnant. And then when I was pregnant, I was taking anti-thyroid medications to suppress my thyroid. And my doctor at the time said, oh, because of your thyroid, like we're going to need to induce you between, or shouldn't say induce at the time. She said the baby should come between 39 and 40 weeks. I don't know what she said at the time, maybe. And I was like, oh, you know, I don't know any different. Sure. Like if that's what you say, then that must be true. I mean, now with my doctor now, she's like, I've never even heard of that. And I was like,
oh, yeah,
great.
Yeah. Thanks. I'm looking it up because I haven't heard that either. So I like to always know that I'm basing what I tell you guys on fact. And I'm like, I've not heard that. I know that untreated can lead to issues, including premature birth, but treated.
Yeah. I don't know. Looking back, I'm like, what are they doing? Anyways. So like they did, I had multiple ultrasounds and growth scans and, non-stress tests towards the end. And I mean, it was great because I got to see him all the time. So that was fun.
Yeah.
So towards the end, she said, we want him to come between 39 and 40 weeks. And really the only way to guarantee that happens is to induce you. And I was like, oh, okay. And at the time my husband, had joined the military and he, didn't have any time off. Hold on. There I go. He didn't have any time off and it was like Thanksgiving week. And we're like, oh, perfect. Like he'll have this week off, you know, we'll induce, it'll go smoothly. and then, so yeah, it was like the Tuesday before Thanksgiving, we went into the hospital at 7:00. And I remember like looking back, I don't remember her even mentioning like risks of induction or really like, you know, she kind of just like said, oh, we're going to induce you with Pitocin and that's about it. I was like, oh, okay. Yeah. I've heard Pitocin. I'm a nurse. Like I remember like from my clinical days, you know, Pitocin and how that went. I wasn't even thinking about like a C-section was like an option really. Mm-hmm. So we went in at 7:00. It took like 5 times to start my IV, and I'm an infusion nurse. And so I was like,
oh, girl. Well, just in my sister's defenses, we start them under very controlled environments for the most part. So like, mm-hmm. you know, big, fat, juicy, gorgeous veins. So when mm-hmm. we have someone that throws us for a loop, like I don't even try if I feel like, you know what I'm saying? And a lot of times, especially day shift nurses, we get the patients that come in the night before, so they're already mm-hmm. up and running. So it's a skill set that really needs to be focused on more in labor and delivery.
And I was really trying to like not say anything about, I didn't want them to know I was a nurse. Like I didn't want to make them anxious. But then after like the third time, I'm like, okay, like, could I maybe suggest an area for you? And then she's like, no, hold on, we got it. And she was using like the light and the vein finder. And then... Yeah.
Well, that's like, really bad if she wasn't getting it with all that. I've never used any of that.
I've never had a hard time with my vein. But anyways, and then she eventually went where I told her and she got it and it was beautiful. But she ended up using a 20 gauge because I guess my veins just didn't want an 18. So anyways, I digress. So doctor came in, she checked me. I was only at a 2, which I had been at 2 for like weeks. So that was not new. Broke my water. So then we just walked around for like an hour. Nothing happened. Mm. You know. They started my Pitocin at around 9. And then from like 9 to like 4:30, I was just like sitting there, you know, like nothing. I didn't really, like, I could feel like my abs or my uterus tightening, but like there was no pain. I wasn't like in active labor. I was just sitting there. And then I went from like 0 to 100. And then I was like full blown, like in like full labor, active labor. It was horrible. And I was like, I need something. I'm okay with an epidural. Like, let's go for it. Did the fentanyl, gave me the epidural, which I don't know if you've ever, I know people talk about like the lidocaine is what they feel the most. That was fine to me. It felt like a shock. Like I got shocked down my right side.
Yeah. That's very normal.
It was like,
they should warn you that you're going to feel that.
And he did, but then I like, don't ever hear people say that it like they only talk about the lidocaine, but I was like, no, I felt like I was like, electricity shot down my leg.
You know, I need to add, I've never had an epidural myself, so I only know what I hear from them and from you guys. And I've never really had anyone like report that was really shocking to them. So I should probably add that to my pain management class just so they're prepped for it.
And that was honestly the worst part of the epidural. And then the epidural was like in and it was working. Well, I mean, as far as like it affecting like the right where it's supposed to, it was. But they actually had to come back in and up my dose because it wasn't covering me all the way. Which I'm a strawberry blonde, and I found out like I know the redhead thing, but I'm like, I don't know, like strawberry blondes, like it's kind of like I don't know if I'm in the category of
either
like,
way. Redhead.
Yeah. I think I am because even when I went back for the C-section, they had to like give me everything. And then finally I wasn't feeling it. So I had the epidural in. He like was not tolerating, the induction. Like his heart rate kept dropping to 50. Like every time I had a contraction.
And what position were you in?
They kept rotating me from like one side to the other side in bed. Pretty much I was in bed laying on my back or on my side the whole time.
And were they upping the Pitocin during all of this?
Oh, that's another thing. So they had me at the max rate of Pitocin. And that was before like, I was even him. In, like, I wasn't even feeling labor. I was at the max rate. And I didn't know. Now I've taken your class and I know all about that. But max rate. And then the doctor came in and had to like, okay them to go higher, which they left me at the same rate for about 2 hours. And then
you know what their max rate was?
20?
Yeah, it's either 20 or 22 at most
facilities. Something like that. I don't quite remember, but it was, yeah, they said they had to get the okay from the doctor to go higher.
I am literally disgusted right now that baby was going down into the 50s, yet they asked for an okay to go up past the hospital policy.
Well, when I was hit the max rate, I hadn't even like been like, I hadn't started active labor.
Was that before epidural?
Yes. That was.
Which is why you got slammed into the wall so quickly all of a sudden. If they would have kept you at 6 to 8 milliunits, you would have gotten there. But the way your body would do it, which is tolerable. Yeah. I'll be honest, the same thing happened to me with Grayson. And I don't know if you heard my story the other day saying that right before I had him, I was 3 centimeters. When I told my midwife, like I let my daughters watch my birth. The only thing they really remember is me saying, if I'm still 3 centimeters, I'm going to kill you. She's my friend. But I went in the bathroom and I remember right after that, and they must have upped my Pitocin again before I went into the bathroom. But you know, when you're in labor, you're not a nurse, no matter what kind of nurse you are. Mm-hmm. I went to the bathroom and I grabbed my ex-husband and I said, tell her to turn off the Pitocin, because my brain knew something was not right with the Pitocin. Mm-hmm. I got out and I had him 7 minutes after her checking me and I was 3. Well, I'm not kidding you guys. I was so traumatized by the pain of those contractions for that last hour. Mm-hmm. And I ended up, my good friend is the educational director of OB in that hospital. And we snuck into my chart. They had me on 28 milliunits.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. They could have blown my uterus. Mm-hmm. Like it's serious. They like, it's just like, it's so counterproductive and counterintuitive of what they do with Pitocin. And I just don't understand it with all the evidence nowadays. Mm. Like, you guys have to advocate for yourself. You have to when it comes to Pitocin.
Well, like, if you didn't know, you wouldn't know what to even say. So
no. Well, I knew. And I still, but had I said something, you know, this was, he's eight. And a lot of my education on this side has been since then. But I sure as hell stopped pushing hard with my doctors for my patients because it's just unacceptable. Anyway, sorry. I can just feel it when you say that. I know why you ended up with an epidural. If I had had to deal with that any more than 7 minutes, because he was my sixth, you know. I couldn't have done it.
Yeah. So, I was at the max rate, and then they left me at the max rate for about 2 hours. And then I started like to really go into labor, had an epidural. They removed me from side to side. That's at the time where he was not tolerating it. Probably like when I was actually in active labor. So they were putting like the fluid into my uterus.
They used an IUPC to infuse.
Yeah. And then they also had, you know, both the contraction monitor inside and then the one on him in his head. Yeah. And then, you know, had an oxygen on and then.
Well, they had that IUPC in because they had that Pitocin up so loud or so high. They have to do that.
Well, then, you know, since they broke my water at like the very beginning. So I was like hooked up to 12 different things at once. They were like moving me from my left to my right and back and forth. And they were in like every 15 minutes. And I was like, I don't know what's happening. So then I think it was, they were doing that. It would help him with the fluids in. Then they get me like him stable and then he kind of like start to go back down and then they'd stabilize him. And then,
you know, they just turn the Pitocin off. That is what they're supposed to do.
I don't know if they did though. I don't remember.
Our resuscitation rules is that you turn the Pitocin off, you put oxygen on, you increase the fluids, you flip the bomb.
Yeah, I don't remember if they did or not.
They should have kept it off for a couple of hours and then they should have started back at least at half or less and gradually went up to see if he could tolerate it.
Yeah, I don't know if they did. Anyways, it was like the evening, it was like 9 o'clock, 10 o'clock at night. They did shift change, kind of nurse. Then about midnight, they said I was at, I don't remember what station they said it was, but they said I could start pushing. I was fully dilated, fully effaced, everything. So I started pushed for 2 hours. Of course, I was on my back. They checked me. The doctor came in. She watched me push a couple times, and she said, baby's not moving. Like, you push and he's just not going anywhere. She said, I'd recommend a C-section, or you could keep pushing for like another 2 hours and probably still have a C-section. And I said,
or you could rest for 2 hours and let the baby move down.
Yeah, that was not an option that she gave me.
God, this is why I do what I do, you guys. It's so maddening to me.
And then, you know, the way she put it, I'm like, well, I don't want to just exert myself for another 2 hours. It's 2:30 in the morning and then still have a C-section. So my husband,
it's like reverse psychology statements is what they do, because you've got a mom who has been through this pain, all of this, like, even though you're a nurse, like being a patient is very disconcerting, and you've been pushing for 2 hours, which is exhausting, not to mention, you know, that baby's not been doing well. And then they phrase it like that.
Yeah. So I'm like, well, my husband and I talked, we were both like really upset. We're like, we didn't want to have a C-section. We didn't even plan to have a C-section. This was not, you know, on the radar. So it took us a while to kind of process it. And I'm like, okay, we'll have a C-section. And I could still feel like I, at the time, like I couldn't not push because like the pressure, I could just feel like I needed to push. So I was like, they said, stop pushing. I'm like, well, I'm just going to like gently push then because I can't, with the pressure right there, I can't not do anything.
And they never put you in any other position, just on your back with your legs. Did you have your legs in the stirrups?
Mm-hmm. Yep. The whole, you know, surgical position. Yeah, it was fine. So then prep me, took me back, started the C-section. It was, I don't know.
Did someone have to get under to push him back up?
I don't. He was at a plus two. That's someone, where he had stopped.
I'm sure your labor nurse probably had to get under there and push him back up.
Yeah, I am not sure. Then I went for my C-section and that was, they had to like load me up on the pain meds because they said, if you can still feel that this is the last dose and if you can still feel it, we're going to have to knock you out. And I said, you are not knocking me out. I can still feel it. I'm just going to still feel it. I'm just going to go for it. Thankfully, it worked at the last
dose.
Okay,
good.
Yeah.
I was like, oh my God, I'm like, I am not going to be knocked out. Yeah.
As soon as I think at that point, I'm like, I think the redhead situation, I must have some of it. And then the C-section itself was horrible because you could still like feel all the pulling and the pressure and the.
That's like, what I'm saying. I'm pretty sure they would have had to because he was really engaged.
Yeah, it's, and people say like, oh, those C-sections are fine. Like you can't feel anything. I'm like, no, you know, like I didn't feel like the sharp pain, but the pressure and the pulling and like the tugging was like the worst pain I'd ever, like it was.
I don't think horrible. C-sections are fine. You don't feel anything is the norm. I think that's what people are conditioned to say because people don't want to hear the truth.
Well,
you know?
Yeah. So I went through like both ways to have a baby anyways. And then I went to the PACU and I was throwing up and it was a mess. And then I didn't, and the OR, they asked me if I wanted to hold him. And I was like, I'd started shaking like during labor. And so I was still shaking in the OR and like, I couldn't stop.
Those shakes are horrible.
And I don't know if that's from the transition or from the epidural.
It's all of it. Both. You get a double whammy when you have an epidural.
Yeah. So I was like, and I was like, I don't trust myself to hold him right now because I'm like, cannot stop shaking. So the golden hour was pretty much non-existent. They took him and then they did all the stuff. And then I was thrown up in the PACU and I was super out of it. And I don't remember like a couple hours, but anyway, so that was my experience with my son Sawyer. And then what brought me to you is I was actually, I was on Instagram and I saw one of your videos about you like come in on shift and the nurse is like, patient's probably going to need to go to the OR, you know, they're not progressing. And you're like, hold on. And you like put your hair back and you like walk in and you're like, I got this. And then, you know, the person has a baby. I'm like, that's like, I wish you were my nurse, like when I was having him, because then I wouldn't have had a C-section. And so then I was like, oh, she knows something. So then I started following you. And then that was only a few weeks ago. And then I kind of saw some videos here and there. And you just hooked me in. And then I went to the Fearless Birth class and then took me a couple of days because my husband and I were like back and forth, like, do we really need all this? Like, can we just go off of what we know now? Cause we already know more than we did. But then I was just like, I would feel a lot more comfortable going through the VBAC class and then the positioning class. Like, I would just mentally feel better and more prepared to go into labor knowing that. So then I did the whole VBAC class this weekend.
Nice.
Yeah.
You know, one of my students, Krista, I think you may have heard me saying the VBAC lab, like really was the foundation for all of it. I had a birth class called Loving Your Labor that I did with a friend, Heather, prior to the VBAC lab, but I was so green. I knew I wanted to empower women and I knew like I wanted to do all these things, but the VBAC lab, when I created the VBAC lab, I put out a call for 15 beta testers, you know, and those 15 girls joined me. And out of those 15, maybe 10 really participated. You know how you have an emotional buy and you buy something and then you never touch it again. So I'm sure the other five probably whatever. But those 10 girls, one of them was Krista, and they created the VBAC lab with me. We did it together. And I wish that I had some mamas when I was creating it that had tried for a VBAC but had a repeat, or tried for a VBAC and had a VBAC, because I think it would have helped me with a little more things that I've learned now from you guys. But Krista said to me, because I mean, we spent so much time. That's how the happy hour was born. And I remember saying, like, because I was talking to my audience too, and that's how I found out, like, your biggest fear is, what if I do all this work and I end up in the OR again? And Krista was like, yeah, but what if I don't do all this work and I end up in the OR? Then I'm just going to be full of regrets and what ifs. She's like, if I do all this work and I end up in the OR, then I know that's what was supposed to happen. It wasn't done to me. No one else decided. No one did it out of convenience. I chose it. And Krista ended up having a repeat cesarean. And I'd really love to talk to her again, because I've learned so much more since then, because that was, you know, late 2020, early 2021. And she labored, she ended up, and she probably could have delivered vaginally. What I've found in doing this, a lot of times you guys are get to a point, because VBACs are slow, y'all. Like, you gotta, we can't do all the things we do to someone who's not had a cesarean, which we probably shouldn't do anyway, but you just, the most important thing is just to be patient. So, like, I'm thinking about your first birth that you've just shared with us, Allison, and the very first thing would have been no to the induction, right? We know that. The next thing would have been like, you're going to break my water and I'm not even in labor. Like, how is that sensible? You know, sensible? No. The next thing would have been like, chill out on the Pitocin, people, you know? And then the next thing would have been staying moving, because if you had been chilling out on the Pitocin, you could have probably went another 12, 14 hours of no epidural, you know? So it's figuring out those pivotal moments where you say no, and you exercise your ability to input, and like going all the way back to your doctor saying we need to deliver between, you know, 39 and 40 weeks. Of course you agreed, because everybody gets induced. You know, it's our cultural norm. So it, because it's so normal, it's like, you don't quite, that people don't question it. And doctors are not used to being questioned. So I'll just tell y'all, when you do question them, when you do say no to certain things, certain providers will get to be little shits. I'll tell you, I've had a couple of my patients, or students, I've had one, her provider came in. So apparently the nurse was like, you know, she doesn't want this, she doesn't want that. The provider came in, picked up her birth plan and wadded it up and threw it in the trash. I personally would have fired his ass. That's what I would have done. Like, that is so, that's such a bad sign. Bad sign, you know, but the thing is that who cares? It's not your responsibility how they feel. As long as you're being wise, you're not just doing something because you can, you're doing it because you've learned and you know this circumstance, it is not necessary. Then you say no. You don't just say no because you're like, I didn't want that at all. And you say no, you're like, no, this doesn't apply to me. And like you said, they are supposed to, and you know this because you're a nurse, informed consent means they're explaining everything they want, good, bad, ugly, and the alternatives to what they want to do. It's not supposed to be, this is the only way, you know, and they're doing it in a way where it's not like, well, you know, I really think we should go back to the OR for cesarean now. If right now baby's doing fine, you don't want to wait until we have a dead baby. Well, you're not going to hear anything else they say. You're going to want to go back. Like, that's, you know, that's that. So that's why I'm so passionate about you guys. It is so worth it. And I can't guarantee that you'll get a vaginal delivery. I wish I could, but I know there are times and there are legit reasons for cesareans. me personally, if I, and you know, I have so many students where they're like, you know, I was just exhausted and like, I chose to go back. Like, I know I probably could have went further and I could have waited, but I just didn't want to. And you know what? That's your choice. I personally, if I were at a position where they're suggesting cesarean and my body's taking longer, I'd be like, you know what? Let's just chill out. I want to rest. Give me time. If you're pushing, say, hey, give me a break. Let me wait an hour and then try pushing again, or let me wait 2 hours, as long as baby's tolerating. Even in the circumstance where you feel the urge to push, I mean, if that, like, I feel like if I had been there and done tug of war with you, we would have gotten that baby out. Now, I don't know if he was in a malposition. I'm not sure. Sometimes that can be an issue, but there's things we can do if we get you off your booty and turn you, you know. So, you know, like, get creative, like, get creative, use your skills. But, you know, I mentioned this last week, but we posted this post on Instagram about the fact is failure progress, which is what they diagnose most of you guys with, is so inaccurately diagnosed. And if they would change that to failure for providers to use their brains, something to that effect, which is what it usually is, it would change, you know, like they would stop doing it. And I had, we didn't say it like that. We were not rude, of course. I don't say half of what I say to you guys in public because that would be hell. But I had a nurse come on there and she was very real. And she's like, you know, it's not because we're being stubborn or lazy, but a lot of us just don't know. And I came back and I said, you know, I get that and I appreciate your transparency, but the fact is the only way you're going to know is if you take it upon yourself to get more education. That's how I did. I took classes outside of what the hospital provided. I followed spinning babies and did a lot of their stuff. I did my own education because it was really important to me that you guys got the birth you wanted and that we weren't just doing a surgery because I didn't do everything I could. You know, so I know with my patients, especially the last half of my career, I know for a fact that if they went back to the OR on my shift, I had done everything I could to get that baby out. And so, and my doctors knew that too. And my doctors knew that I would put off calling them as long as possible so she could have a, you know, an opportunity. But, you know, this culture has to change because it's not fair. It's not fair. If you guys go back for a major abdominal surgery when it's not necessary and it's really their issue, it's not fair, you know?
And I had to tell my doctor, I actually had to ask my doctor this time around because I switched doctors. Okay, so I should back up. So my 6 week with my doctor, I asked her, you know, why did I have to have a C-section when I was looking back at it? And she said, oh, he wasn't tolerating it. And I was like, if he wasn't tolerating it, then why did I push for 2 hours? Like, that doesn't make sense to me. So then when I saw my new doctor, because I couldn't see my chart. So I asked my new doctor, I said, why did I have a C-section last time? Because she says it wasn't because he wasn't tolerating it. And she's looked at my chart and she said, well, it looks like it was a failure to progress. And I was like, so what does that mean? And she explained it to me and she said, sometimes with inductions, like they can get shoved into like a really weird spot because your body's not ready for that. And so then his head could be all wonky and whatnot. So, but I'm like, my last doctor didn't tell me that. And I was like, the one who actually did the procedure. I was like, are you kidding me?
Well, of course not, because that affects, like, that doesn't look good for them either. Hold on 1 second, you guys. My dog's going crazy.
Jason, go on. Go. Hey, do I need to sign? No.
Another doggy, huh?
Okay, sorry. I knew she would not stop. Anyway, yeah, it's so maddening. Like, I mean, like I've had conversations with my husband so many times because I know in all careers, people get in their thing, they do it their way, they have their excuses or whatever. But it's just so maddening to me. This the whole thing is so maddening to me, and like it has to change. Like this is, you know, and I know we're making a difference. Like our mission statement for Labor Nurse Mama is changing the birth culture one mama at a time, and that's what it's going to take. Is them to get with the picture and realize that women are not just going with it anymore. That they have to come up with reasons. They have to show studies. They have to show evidence. That's why I say to you guys, if they quote a study, if they say, and this is what typically happens. I've been doing my happy hours and spending time with y'all for a couple years now. What happens when they say, let's go back for you. Well, you know, if you are on thyroid medications and blah, 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 then they say, you know, it's been shown that it's best for a baby to be delivered between 39 and 40 weeks. Instead of reacting emotionally, you stop, you take a deep breath, and you say, okay, so I've been doing a lot of education and I really love seeing research. Can you please go print that study or print that so I can take it home and see it? Read it myself. This is what they do a lot of times. Well, you know, you don't really you don't have to do that, but it is best. Okay, thank you. Can you print that and show it to me? And if they go and they print you something, 9 times out of 10, we can go through it and find the holes in it. You know, a lot of times what will happen is maybe you had a mama on Synthroid or on some thyroid medication who also had GDM, who also had this and that and the other going on. And they're using that one instance to, you know, there's a subset of doctors who use whatever the freak they can to get everybody induced. And the truth of the matter is, and, you know, in some cases, this is changing in some ways, but most of the time, from what I know, is that when your prenatal is paid from your insurance, it's a one lump sum. It includes all the visits and the delivery. So if this doctor delivers you, they get that lump sum. You know, it evens out for them in some circumstances, but if they induce you, they know for sure they're getting that lump sum. Do you see what I'm saying? I'm sure a percentage goes to the practice. But the person who does delivery, I mean, and I could tell you this for a fact, because if your nurse accidentally delivers you, they throw a baby fit. Now, why? Why would they? If the baby's fine, mom's fine, it's out of your control, right? It comes down to money. You need to watch, if you haven't watched the documentary, The Business of Being Born by Ricky Lake. It's probably like 10 or 15 years old now. I don't know. It's older, but it is so good. And what I love about it is that her videographer or director, I don't remember, it's been a minute, who's filming it, I think it's the girl who's filming it, is pregnant and ends up delivering prematurely and has a C-section. So it shows you there's legit reasons for that, you know, and their whole premise is that it's a business, you know. It's such a good documentary. Anyway, let me hop to Alyssa. How are you, Alyssa? Have you shared your story?
I did a little bit of it on Friday.
Well, you can go ahead and we probably need to condense it, which is partly my fault. Sorry, I got off on tangents. But yeah, just tell us about your first birth and like what brought you here.
Well, I mean, a lot of what Allison was saying kind of happened to me, but my water broke on my own. And more than I should have stayed home, but it was my first, so I didn't know, you know, anything else. We went in, it was literally broke like on his due date an hour after we went to bed. So we were tired and exhausted, and I think that kind of played a part to a lot of things, but yeah. I know I did, you know, with like a lot of the other stuff that you were saying, I had GD with him. It was very well diet controlled. I didn't, like, within the last month of it, they only had me testing every other day because I was always good. I wasn't ever over or under. I was always like good. So, and because of that, my OB said that, you know, we wouldn't schedule anything to be induced or anything like that. But I, you know, said specifically that, no, I don't want to be induced. So I knew that was one major thing I didn't want, because that can lead to lots of other things. But yeah, we went in and they started me on Pitocin right away. I wasn't even dilated yet.
I remember you saying that they didn't even tell you about the Pitocin.
Yeah, they just told me that they were putting me on fluids.
That blows me away.
Yeah, I was very upset about that, because I knew, like, one of the things from Pitocin is for swelling, or you could swell. And for me, I always get hit with like the baddest like things if
symptoms. Oh, that,
yeah. So I'm like, no, I don't want that to happen to me, because then I think I would have to have a C-section. But I didn't know that they put me on it. And then I kind of went back to sleep. And then, yeah, I got hit pretty much like wham, like Allison did. And I was like, oh my gosh. So we started walking around, and I was on the ball at this time. And then I had gone in the tub for a little bit, but then they didn't want me in there more than 10 minutes because the temperature can change things. I don't know. They were saying something about that, and they're like, no, we want you out now. And then I was like, okay. So
sometimes I wonder the shit they make up. Like, people deliver in tubs. They don't have to stay in 10, get out, stay in.
Mm-hmm.
Most of the time they get out because they get cold.
Yeah. So I was like, okay. So I did. I got out or whatever. And then I think I probably went about 12 hours before I got an epidural, because I was like, this is not going very well. And it was just like, bam. And I didn't know what to do.
Yeah.
So we got an epidural, and then I was pretty much confined to the bed because I couldn't move. And yeah, they, you know, flip sides. But I was mostly on my back. They had come to check me, and literally it was changing of shifts too. Every person that came in said, boy, it looks like you're going to have a big baby, every single time.
This is why you print my no negativity in this room, put it on the door.
Yeah. And was it even, like, the midwife said so, the on-call OB, like, they were all, boy, it looks like you're going to have a big baby. Are you sure you don't want a C-section now, you know, and avoid complications? Yeah, all that stuff. And ended up, I think it was probably about 20 hours. Nothing, I wasn't progressing. They said I was at a 4. And
wait a minute, though, you started at nothing.
Yeah.
That is progression.
Yep. So they said I wasn't doing anything, and I was so swollen. And then, like, maybe about a half hour after that, I got a really, like, I was like chills and like really like chomping, like something's wrong. I was like, something's wrong. And they're like, oh, that's normal to get the chills or whatever, and your teeth chattering and stuff. And I'm like, no, but something's wrong. The baby's heart rate dropped. And
blood pressure drop?
Mine did not, but I spiked a fever and started throwing up. And then his dropped so low that they're like, all right, we're taking you back. So
So you got an infection.
They took me back because they thought I had an infection, but I did not. So
this is why I put on your birth plans, if there's signs of infection, to try treatment first.
Yeah.
You know.
Yeah. So I didn't, I mean, I'm like, okay, this is happening. Okay. And yeah, since it was my first ever surgery, I'd never been in the hospital, never had stitches, never broken a bone. So I was like freaking out. I mean, I knew it was always a possibility, but
yeah,
I was a little more freaking out. And then, they right away when they took him out, they were like, oh yeah, this is a big baby. 'Cause he was 10 pounds, 12 ounces, 24 inches long.
Well, that's accurately a big baby, but you made him.
Yes.
How many inches long?
24.
Damn, you birthed a toddler.
Yeah. Yep.
And
now everybody thinks he's like 3.5.
Yeah. Grayson was 23 inches. He's my longest, but he looked like a noodle because he was only like 7'8".
Oh, yeah.
He just looked like someone stretched him out.
I was like, oh, he doesn't look that big because, you know, he didn't have any fat rolls or anything, or
yeah, because he was long
too. He was,
yeah.
So, wow. But he had some issues, and they had to take him back to the NICU right away. So I didn't even get to. I just touched his finger, and that was about it. And then my oxygen got really low, and they wouldn't let me see him for like 24 hours.
Because of yours?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. So it was all very traumatizing. And then dad was kind of mad too, because they wouldn't let him cut the cord because they didn't want him to faint. So
isn't that his decision?
Yeah.
Then let him sit down and roll over to the warmer. Like, come on.
Yeah. So it was, we both had a bad first experience. So
I can't even tell y'all how many times I've gotten in arguments with the nursery nurses. I do it nicely, very politely, but they don't like it.
Yeah.
I'm really sorry. I'm truly sorry for you guys. Like, that's not like you build this baby, you anticipate this greeting and this meeting of this baby, and then it's taken from you. And it's like, it's a real thing that, like, you guys deserve to be able to grieve that loss.
Yeah. Like you were saying, your husband's 6'5". Well, my dad's 6'7". So, and I'm the shortest of the kids, and my mom is 5'2". So, and she birthed 4 9-pound, 22 inch babies.
How
just
tall are
on.
You?
I'm 5'8".
So of course you're going to have a big baby, you know?
Yeah. So I'm just like, come on, if my mom could do it, I
at 5'2", yeah.
So, yeah.
When a mama comes in who's short like that, I've seen so many times they just add the C-section papers to her chart. Like, they go ahead, print them, fill them out, everything. I'm like, you're literally like setting, like you're putting that into the universe. Like, come on, let's not do that. Like, just like them coming in, and this is why I say, like, in my birth plans, like, for the dilation, no negativity. Like, I don't want to hear, oh, you're still 3, or you're just 3, or that's a big baby. What are you saying? Like, that's what we need to start doing. Like, when they say stuff, well, what is your point? Are you trying to make me feel like I can't do it? You know, like, call, like, we got to call them out. Like, I know that's difficult when you're the one in labor and I can't do it when I'm your nurse, but someone needs to. Like, I've seen some things, and sometimes it just takes one time that you get embarrassed by what you did for you to never do it again. And I'm talking about for the staff, you know, hold on, come in.
Are you teaching?
Uh-huh.
Oh, mm-hmm.
When
are you done?
Just a little bit.
Okay.
Love you. Okay. Sorry. I got both of them home today. I decided not to send him yet. He's been on antibiotic for 2 days, but he's still like, ugh. Anyway. Well, thank you for sharing. I'm super glad you're here. You're going to learn a lot. I always love it when you guys find me earlier. But not that you can't have some really powerful experiences. I've got a couple of VBAC moms that I've done lives with that you guys can listen to that found me like right at the end, just like you, Alice, Allison, just the same, and had amazing experiences. So let me hop to Grace. Oh, is she turning? Is she going? I always call on you guys when you're not expecting it. So just expect that.
Hi everyone. Hi ladies. Hey, Gator. Okay. So I have an 11:30 appointment with my OB coming up.
What time zone are you?
Pacific. I'm in California. Good. I'm in Los Angeles.
Got some time. Yeah. Okay, good.
Yeah. So I just I'm 40 weeks and she suggested inducing me today, and I last week at my 39 week appointment. And I said I would think about it. And towards the end of the week, I went ahead and canceled it. Do you have a meeting? Okay, sorry, my husband works from home. So I just felt that I definitely didn't want to be induced. And I'm 40 years old, and I have the SUA condition, the single umbilical artery. And the baby's measuring fine though. He's maybe measuring like 6 or 7 pounds from what she both thinks. And so there's no fear of a big baby, but she said, you know, stillbirth and all these other things, risks go up if you decide to wait past 40 weeks. And so anyway, I'm going to tell her today. She's probably going to want to, you know, get an answer from me today about, you know, some kind of induction period. Like, do I want to do it midweek or when? And I think I've decided I want to at least wait till next Monday when I'm 41 weeks. And if you're still not here by then, you know, we can go through with it. I've been having contractions here and there, like every day, this morning, and they're just not consistent. I did have that membrane sweep and that was awful. but the next day I was so excited because at 6 a.m. I started having contractions and I thought, oh my God, this is it. This could be it.
Oh, it's such a mind mess. It messes with your head so much.
Yeah. So it was from 6 a.m. to about 3 p.m., like 7 minutes apart. And it was tiring. And then they went away. And then they came back maybe later that evening, like around 8 or 9. And they were 10 minutes apart for maybe about 3 hours. And then that was it. That's all she wrote.
Yeah, so, but that means, I mean, that's good. It's doing something. So
I did notice with the membrane sweep, she said that I was about 3 centimeters and 60% effaced.
Yeah.
And after that day of 7 minute contractions, he's so much lower. I mean, I thought I was feeling pressure before, but now I'm like,
yeah,
my belly looks low and it just, there's the pressure is even intensified. So, I'm just, you know, kind of playing that tug of war with myself. Like, am I doing the right thing? I don't want to be selfish in this decision and put his life in danger. Just because I had a really bad experience the first time with the induction. And,
but again, spontaneous labor is better for you and baby. So are you putting yourself at risk if baby's doing well? Like, I wouldn't say willy-nilly, oh, I'm going to go to 42 weeks, but I'm not coming in the doctors. No, you go in, you get your NSTs, your BPPs, whatever. Make sure baby's doing, you pay attention to fetal movement. Like, if it were me, I would go in today. I'm sure they're going to do an NST.
I have one at 3 o'clock.
Yeah, if baby's fine, when you go into your appointment today, I would have another sweep. It usually takes 2 or 3 for it to go. And then tonight, what I would do, have you started doing the 30-minute nipple stimulation?
I have not, no. I was planning on doing that tonight if I didn't, you know, have anything else going. But it's 30 minutes and then you rest for 15 for 3 hours.
Okay, so no, what I'm talking about is just the daily nipple stimulation. Once you guys hit 38, I recommend that you 38 weeks, you do 30 minutes of nipple stimulation. When I was doing a lot of research for the birth classes, I came across this midwife who is a home birth midwife. And there's some areas as a nurse that I don't trust home birth midwives. But when it comes to knowing the normalcy and the physiological side of birth, they know it because they see birth in the wild, you know, like without all the crap we do. So they see it, how it really goes. So she has all of her patients or her clients at 38 weeks, she has them start 30 minutes of nipple stimulation per day. She does it, they do it 15 minutes on one side, back to back, 15, 15, lowest setting on your pump. You can do it. You don't have to use the pump, but that is probably the best way to preserve your nipples.
Can I do it at the same time? Like, or is it just one breast at a time with
you
my phone?
You can. And actually, we had a student whose provider told her that she could do that. But I personally, for my VBAC moms, we don't want to hyperstim your uterus in any way. Mm-hmm. So I would recommend 15 and 15. That just to be cautious, you know, and this is not gonna, I mean, it might, here's the thing. If your body is ready for labor, like if it's on the verge of labor, I always say we only need a sniff of Pitocin, whatever it is, a sniff. And it's like, oh yeah, I know what I'm doing. So it could put you in labor, but more than likely it's going to, what it does is it just gets all of the stuff going and gets that cervix nice and favorable. I don't remember her stats, but it was a very high number of her patients who went into labor by 41 weeks. So it was spontaneously, no inductions involved.
And so 30 minutes every day.
Every day. What I've added in, just to, it makes sense, is to do it in a darkened room or in the evening. I always recommend you for sure do it after a membrane sweep that evening. So what that's kind of what I recommend. I recommend for my VBAC moms, once you hit 39 or 40 weeks, whichever you're comfortable with, to ask for membrane sweeps and do them at least 2 or 3 prior to agreeing to a induction. Your cervix is very favorable. It's very likely that your induction will be positive. It'll end in vaginal delivery. Like your Bishop score's high, but it's also favorable for labor. So what's going to be easier on you and baby is to go into labor. So I would recommend agreeing to membrane sweep. And then ask her if you can come in again, maybe Thursday or Friday for another membrane sweep. And whenever they want to do an NST, whatever, I would agree to those. And then, I just linked to Rebecca's podcast. If you haven't listened to it, they were doing the same thing about a dead baby. And she said, well, couldn't my baby pass in between now and then? And they're like, well, yeah. So, you know, like, what are you saying to me? There's a chance. There's always that chance. And the percentage is so low. And a lot of times what they're doing is they're quoting the chances of a fetal, we call it fetal demise, but a baby passing, they're comparing induction at 39 weeks to an induction after your due dates. They're not comparing spontaneous labor with the induction that they're recommending. Because the chances with a spontaneous labor, the babies just do better. And so do moms. So I would agree to coming in on Monday, having her check and see what's going on. Listen to Rebecca's podcast. Hers is really good. And she was mentally struggling, and you'll hear that. She was going through everything you're going through right now.
I have a question about Pitocin, if that does end up happening to me with having a VBAC. She said, you know, I like to do low and slow in the beginning and just see where that takes you. And my question is there a limit that they can't go past with the VBAC because of your stress on your uterus?
No, not really any different than what they
like
should.
A number
they,
limit.
They just have a limit in general. I don't like to see you guys get past 6 or 8 milliunits. It's really unnecessary past that. Once you get past that, your receptors are full anyway.
Yeah. You know what I mean? So, I really want to do a natural delivery, non-medicated. Yeah. And I just remember from the Pitocin, those were monsters.
Well, and I'm going to say, because I've had 3 inductions that were unmedicated personally, and Grayson's awful situation, but they had me way too high on Pitocin. If you go low and slow, it's very manageable unmedicated. Okay. I did it. I was determined. I say like birth grit is really important. If you're that type of girl who bites onto something and sticks, you're going to do just fine. But that being said, if they go low and so slow and she's for real about that, then you probably won't have, I really honestly don't foresee you having much problem even getting your body into labor at this point. The other recommendation I would have for you, depending, let me know, do you have, are you a student and a member? Just remind me, because we've had like 25
yes.
bat signals going. Mm-hmm. Okay. In your labor bat signal.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Write out everything that's going on that we've talked about today, just to give me and give Taylor a refresh of what we talked about. And what I think we should do, I want to hear what they say today. Because I have a feeling you may not be dilated more, but you might be effaced more, and find out what, ask her, say, where's my cervix at? Is it posterior? Is it interior? Where's it at? Like all the things, and ask her what your Bishop score is. And she's going to be like, damn, this girl knows a lot, you know? And then what I'm thinking is you push her off, tell her you'll come in maybe Monday morning. And on Sunday, we can maybe bust out the big guns and do the 3 hours of nipple stimulation, maybe the midwife's brew if you're up for it. And you can listen to Rebecca's as well. She was at that point, but I don't think she actually drank the midwife's brew. Now, if you're thinking about doing it, you might have better luck in California than we do on the East Coast, but the lemon verbena tea is hard to get. So if you guys even think you're thinking about it, I don't care how far along you are, order it now. And then in California, you'll have better luck getting the peach nectar or whatever, the apricot stuff, than we will here. But that lemon verbena tea, like Amazon's the way to go on that one. So, you know, in Germany, they use peach schnapps. I wouldn't quite recommend that, but it might make you feel better taking it if you do. But yeah, so, and you want to do, so with that, I would do the midwife's brew and then the 3 hours of the nipple stimulation, or maybe do it in at the same time in the evening. So I would recommend Sunday night you do that.
Okay.
So what I want to tell you guys, with the 3 hours of nipple stimulation, you're going to get contractions going more than likely if you wait until you're after 40 weeks. If they're like 30, 40 second little putzers that are coming often, that's okay. But if you start getting ones that follow the rules where they're lasting a minute or longer and they're coming closer and closer, then you need to stop. Give it some time, okay. See if they go away. If they go away, then you can start again. But we don't want to get you hyperstimulated, not because I'm super worried about a rupture. I'm more worried about you got being able to handle it and baby being able to handle it, because the baby has to use their oxygen reserve. So we want them to have a break in between. If you stop and they're still coming and you hit the contraction rule, go in, you know. But when I first started, I had an influencer who reached out to me for a labor gown, and she was like, you know, I'll do a YouTube video. And she was pretty big at the time. I don't follow her anymore. I mean, I don't use social media, to be honest. But she did her birth video, and she did not say on there that she did nipple stimulation, but I asked her afterwards because she was hyperstimulated, like massively. So she should have stopped the nipple stimulation and checked it out. Like, okay, so if they're coming, if you're having 5 contractions in a 10 minute period, so less than 2 minutes apart, and they're lasting for a minute, if they're 10, 20, 30 seconds, that's not a big deal. That's just a stimulated uterus. But if they're lasting 60 seconds each, you wanna chill out, you know, because we don't wanna overdo it. We wanna get you into labor slowly. This is the same as me blasting you with Pitocin. We don't wanna do that.
Right. You know? Okay, well, thank you.
I have
you.
A feeling it's not going to take much for you, though.
I hope not.
I agree. It's not going to take much. There you go. We got to flip that mindset, girls. It makes a huge difference. Hey, Brooke, how are you? All laid back on your couch.
I'm good. Yeah, I made the mistake of laying down 15 minutes before this started. So,
and you fell asleep.
Sorry, I'm late.
That's okay.
Anyways, I'm 39 weeks today. I definitely need to flip the mindset, because this weekend I just felt weird and I was like, it's going to happen anytime. And I kept like waking up in my own bed, like, damn it, I'm awake in I'm still here. So yeah. Anyways, I need to just take a breath and take a step back. And I think I'm just getting anxious about running into that deadline and my provider being like, okay.
So let's examine that. What deadline? The one they've set or the one that's realistic, which is 42 weeks?
Right. Yeah. The one that they've set. And it's hard because I see a different provider every week. And some of them are like, yeah, like you can go to 41. And I'm like, okay, cool. Like, I think like for this practice, that's pretty like
liberal.
Well, you know, then the last one that I saw last week was like, well, if you're at 43, like it's probably not going to happen on its own. And I'm like, BS, but you know,
So that's where you say, really? I've not heard that. And I've done a lot of research. Can you go print the studies for me?
I know. I need to.
Seriously. Very friendly, like non-threatening, like, yeah. Oh my gosh, I'm so interested in hearing that. I haven't read that in my own research. Can you print that? Because I would love to talk to my partner about that.
Yeah, I'm writing this down.
Yeah.
So anyways, I just need to chill out because it's fine. It's going to happen. I have an appointment Wednesday, so I'll be like 39 and a half-ish. Weeks, and we'll do a membrane sweep then, and you know, just see what happens after that. So that's the plan right now. I'm just want to get at least one membrane sweep in before 40 weeks, because it just depends on who I'm going to see. I switched my appointments to midwives instead of OBs these last two, so I'm hoping that they'll be a little more liberal and anyways.
Well, and don't count on that. But I want to remind you guys the power of our own thoughts. If you like, I'm sure all of us know people who have struggled with infertility, who have done all the things, and then they're like, enough. They start the adoption process and they get pregnant.
Yeah, that's us.
It is your mindset. Yeah. Now, I'm not saying you're at fault for all of that, but there are parts of it that we really mentally can block. So it's really important that when you start feeling that, like that fear of the deadline, to ask yourself, like, what deadline? Why? Like, I don't, you know, like, and you know, unless you're an IVF pregnancy, you really don't know down to the moment when you got pregnant. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, you might be 38 weeks.
Yeah.
And you're pushing your body to do what it's not ready to do. And our bodies are so incredibly powerful, so incredibly powerful. So trust it, trust your body, unless your body tells you otherwise. And so, yeah, who cares if you don't have the baby by 40 and 30? You might be 39 and 3.
Right. You know? So I'm just telling myself, like, he's grown, like, he, this is an important week, like, time for him to still be in my tummy. Like, there, he's still growing. He's still, he's doing great in there. He's a happy,
and I would tell him that,
baby, you know,
tell your body that every day, like you're doing fantastic. Thank you for building this baby. Thank you for bringing this baby out to me. And just reminding yourself how incredibly powerful you are. And if they weren't saying all those things, you wouldn't be thinking all these things. You'd be like, oh, baby's coming soon. I can't wait.
Right.
When is it coming? And you wouldn't doubt that. If you hadn't gone through what you've gone through, you wouldn't doubt that.
For sure. For sure.
You know? Yeah. And that's an important part for you. I know some of you guys just joined. Make sure you go into the birth trauma, processing your previous birth. I don't care if you're ready to have that baby. I really want you to do it so that you get rid of those triggers and you figure out those triggers and then share it in the previous birth space. Because, you know, depending on the day, you'll get a lot of responses from other VBAC moms, but Taylor and I will, we know everyone's stories. So we'll try to tag some of the moms who have similar things and how did they process it, you know?
Yeah. They have me scheduled for a C-section at 40+3. And I keep playing phone tag with the surgery coordinator, just saying, like, leaving messages back and forth where I'm like, I just want to cancel it because I might not show up and I don't want to get in trouble for that.
I would recommend you call today and say, I am canceling.
Yeah. That's how I,
don't be wishy-washy. So
that's how I phrased it the first time. And then she, and I even said, like, no need to call me, like, feel free to leave a message once it's canceled, like, feel free to, you know, or just cancel it. You don't have to call me back. So I've gotten, I got a message back saying, like, we'd love to discuss your, and I'm like, oh, I know what's coming. So I left a message this morning and just said, hey, just following up again, just wanted to make sure that this is canceled. You know, I'm sure there's, like, people who need to get in, like,
not me.
Cancel it.
Well, so, and the funny thing about that is if it's so important, such an emergency, but if your provider gets sick, their family member gets sick, or their schedule gets rearranged, you're going to get rescheduled.
Right. And if it is an emergency, they're not going to be like, well, we don't really have room today, you know?
Oh, did they? So that's another common thing. They'll say, well, we need to get you scheduled because we're really full that week.
Yeah.
No, it does not work like that. First of all, if you came in and you were a VBAC mom who did not want to have a vaginal delivery and you're in labor, they would bump everybody else.
Right. Yeah.
You know, they're not going to not bump.
No, I'm not afraid to call it out on convenience.
Yeah. It's terrible. Yeah. It's such games. Yeah. Like, that's why we have to expose this, because I'll tell y'all right now, I feel very sorry for two people, my daughter's providers. Because she's been here, you know, like, when I was creating Labor Nurse Mom and doing all this, she's homeschooled, sitting with me, listening to me. She sits and listens. She watches my lives. My son, who's 27, him and his girlfriend do a lot of the podcast editing. So there's nothing going to be pulled on those two. They know more than they, like, the very first time she sat with me, our very first episode was vaginal tearing. I wish I could have recorded her. She was like, what is that? Horrible. Yeah. So they are going to have my kids, like, and that's what I want. Like, I want to get it to a point where they cannot do this to women.
Yeah. I think it's just annoying being at a practice. Like, my last practice, I had my kids along, like, my youngest is 5 and a half, and it was back when we lived in Texas, and it was the same guy every time. It's just annoying having multiple, a different doctor every week, because I'm like, are you guys talking to each other? Like, he was on board with 41. Please tell every, like, write this down. Or, like, can I record you? Because then the next person's like, oh, I don't know. And then the next person's like, oh, yeah, no problem. So I think that's part of the anxiety, too, is, like, I don't want to have to keep doing battle over and over.
To me, that should be part of the confirmation. that's what confirms to me that we're on the right path. When a woman in Seattle can eat during labor and it's not a big deal, but a woman in Tennessee can't eat because it's terribly dangerous.
Right.
Yeah. What, bodies are different in Seattle. Yeah. Medications.
Okay. On that topic though, is it okay for VBAC moms to eat during labor since there's like, increased, you know, chance of needing a C-section?
So what's the difference between you and a first-time mom who needs an emergency C-section?
Right. That's true.
Yeah.
Yeah.
You really have to like break it down logically because they make it so illogical. Like, I don't like, I'm going right now. I've got a little bit of a battle going on in YouTube. I've actually deleted and stopped because an anesthesiologist got on and like my one about eating in labor. And he's like, well, it's because of the risk of vomiting during labor. That's the best pushing there is. Who cares if she vomits? It's not like we're not like we're like immobile and can't sit up and puke.
Right.
You know, like you're really going to say it's because she might puke in labor. Who does that bother? Not you guys. That means we have to clean it up. And trust me, I've had some bad experience. At one time I was putting epidural in and this mom sat up and threw up all over me. My watch was dripping. I finished, it stayed sterile. She missed her vagina. So we stayed sterile and I finished getting it in. But this side of me was dripping puke. So I understand that. Like, yeah, for me, I'd rather you weren't had a full tummy and got sick and puked on me, but it's not about me.
Right.
You know, and the thing is like, how isn't our C-section rate so high if women don't have the energy to continue? Like, of course you're going to choose the easy way out.
Mm-hmm. Yep. You know? Especially, I started having some like painful contractions this last weekend and I was like, oh, I forgot how they felt. Like, do I want the C-section?
No, like, because you also remember how painful a recovery can be from a
C-section. For sure. Yeah. It's like easier up front, but more work on the back end. And obviously all the other pros and cons, but it was like, okay, I have to commit to this because it's painful.
Yeah. I had a good friend who had her fifth baby. She was older. It's when I lived in South Florida. She delivered at the hospital I worked at. I just wasn't there. But she decided that she wanted a C-section with this baby. She had them all vaginally. Her babies are bigger. And she was like, I just don't want to go through it. And all of my friends who've had C-sections said that it's just so much easier. You go in, you leave. And I said everything I could. And I've, in the course of my career, family and friends are the worst. I worked at a hospital that was a hot mess. You might as well have a birth at home. That's how bad it was. It was a hot mess. And for my nurse here, they had no blood in-house. They had no anesthesiologist at night, no doctor in-house at night, which if you're going to deliver in a hospital, you're delivering there because you want those things. You don't want to be having a home birth, hospital birth, right? And it was a hot mess. And I told, but it was the pretty one. Right. Had all the ambiance. And I told all of my friends, I worked there. I was like, you don't want to come there. Those nurses, it was meant to be a birth center and they turned it to they were moving towards high risk, but the nurses were not trained to deal with high risk. So it was in a process of being a nightmare. They had a women's center and the OB center. The charge nurse was in charge of both levels, which was like, it was a LDRP, which is labor, delivery, recovery, postpartum. So the charge nurse would have 60 women, maybe 40 couplets, babies and moms under her care, no hospitalist, no anesthesiologist, no blood. And they hired 26 new nurses at once. So night shift was all new nurses who did not know what they were doing. And I told everybody I knew, don't deliver there. If you deliver there and something goes wrong, they're going to separate you and baby. They will take baby to the big hospital. And you, if you leave, your insurance won't pay for you if you leave. And so all of my friends kept delivering there, and regretfully, some of them had really bad situations. And I finally got to a point where I would say it one time to them, like, hey, I really recommend you don't deliver there. They're in a transition. Once they get their staff trained and they have the resources, it'll be a beautiful place to deliver. But now don't deliver there. Kept doing it. So my friend, I told her, by that point, I had learned my lesson. They either listen or they don't. So I told her, I was like, you know, don't do it. Well, I forgot about it. And I saw that she'd had the baby, and she tagged me and said, Trish Ware is the only person who told me the truth about a cesarean recovery. She was miserable, miserable. The thought, it blows my mind to think that a recovery from a major abdominal surgery, meanwhile having to care for a human while doing so, could be easier than what your body's intended to do, you know? Mm-hmm. Now, granted, mm-hmm. if you have a third or fourth degree tear, or you have really big hemorrhoids, it ain't easy.
Right.
But it's manageable, you know? Yeah. So anyway.
And you're not even given like a physical therapy plan like you are for any other surgery that you get.
Other surgery would send you home. Every other surgery that you have sends you home with someone caring for you.
Yeah.
And this one, which is your abdominal, your core, you're supposed to care for another person. Like, it doesn't mm-hmm. make any sense to me at all. And yeah, you're right. Like, insurance should pay for all those things, plus pelvic floor therapy.
Yeah. Like 6 to 8 weeks of physical therapy, like you would with ankle surgery or.
Yeah.
Anyways, yeah,
it's saddening that I could go way off on that, but
I know. At the same time, I have to be okay if something crazy goes down.
Yeah,
I will survive a C-section again.
And you'll grieve, okay. And that's okay. Right. And it's not the end of the day either, because I have a lot of successful VBAC 2Cs if you have another baby. So that knowing that as well, like being able to wrap your mind around, there are legit reasons for cesareans, mm-hmm. and you may fall into that. I hope you don't fall into the I'm going to do it because I'm exhausted category.
Right.
But I do see it. And I really think that should be factored into the VBAC success rate. The success mm-hmm. rate is already very high.
Right.
But I think they should break it
categorize.
Apart.
Yeah.
Because my own, so we have had students that have had uterine rupture, 2 out of all of my students. And that goes right along with the rate, the actual percentage of worldwide. Mm-hmm. I have had my success rate has gone right along. However, I know their stories, and a big chunk of them have chosen cesarean because they just don't want to do it anymore. And even if you listen to Cassie's story, her podcast episode, she says in there, her doctor's like, if you want to keep trying, you can. And she was just like, I'm done. You know, and I think she's got a little bit of regret about that. But at the same time, at that moment, like, she was done.
Yeah.
You know? So
right.
Being cautious that right now you're balancing rest, you're eating a healthy diet, you're doing all the things mentally you need to do so that when you do go into labor, it's game time and you're ready for it and you're in it for the long haul.
Mm-hmm.
I would tell yourself, like, when you go into labor, unless you're like, listen to Rebecca's, you'll hear, unless it's something like Rebecca's, you'll be like, okay, this baby's coming, you know. Another one I need to interview, because she's one of my favorite VBAC stories. She had a C-section, and then she came to us. And her name's Laura. Her husband was so funny, because I tell your partners, keep her moving. You know, movement's so important. They get to the hospital and she's like, you know, she waited for the contraction rule, all of that. They get to the hospital and she was like, drop me off at the front door, like at the emergency room, because it was nighttime. And he's like, no, Trish said, keep moving. seriously lucky she didn't have the baby in the parking lot, but so many people saw her because they parked and they had to go through a crosswalk. She's hovered over in the first one, breathing through contractions. Second crosswalk, same thing. By the time she got to the doors, they were waiting for her because so many people had run in seeing her, and she had the baby within, I mean, I think in her pictures, I'll see if I can find it, but in her pictures, I think she's still dressed in street clothes when with the baby on her. So yeah, so that's the most important things you guys can do is combat an induction for non-legit reasons and stay at home as long as possible. The longer you stay at home, the more likely you are to be obviously unmedicated, which allows your labor to progress with all the out the negativity and the discomforts of being a patient coming in. Get to the hospital when you hit your contraction rule. Stay moving. And then if your plan is an epidural, hopefully you're in full-blown active labor. Once you're in active labor, the chances of your, if you've done those things, the chances of your baby being in a malposition, very unlikely, you know, because position, all of those things in spontaneous labor happens the way it's supposed to happen so that you get to those stages the way you should. You've got, I don't have any of my props out, but if you force labor, you force baby to get in the position to help labor go on, which is their head on the cervix. Well, if you force baby before baby has done it itself, however baby lands, and that sets the course of your labor. That also sets the course of the possibility of a C-section, because a malpositioned baby throws a wrench into the whole process. Not that it can't be done. It can be done, but it takes a lot more extra oomph, a lot more birth grant to deal with that. You know, I mean,
my first baby was OP and I got an epidural pretty early on.
Yeah.
So I'm hoping this one I can, I'm planning to wait longer than I did last time.
Yeah.
But I don't regret my decision last time, but it, hoping to not have that again.
My birth with Eleni, and you may have, if you've listened to any of the recordings of Happy Hours, my birth with Eleni, she was, so my last two, well, Grayson too, but he got into proper position, but a lot, or Gavin and Eleni both were breech. Go figure. I've had a lot of babies. My uterus is stretched out. Gavin, they did an ECV, immediately broke my water to start labor. I was 38 weeks. Lainey, I went in at 39 weeks for them to check, and they were going to do an ECV, turn her. She was head down. And of course, I knew nothing that I know now. It was my first year of nursing. And they immediately broke my water. Well, guess what? Yeah, she was head down. But what freaking position was she in? Face up.
Mm-mm.
So they broke my water and she got right down there. She had a triple nuchal cord. It was the worst experience. And if you listen, I share the story, but I'm not kidding when I say that I asked for a C-section and they told me that the one anesthesiologist was in the OR, and I sat up and said, I need him more. Mm-hmm. And they were like, well, she's cut open. And I remember looking, because I knew I had done my rotations there for nursing school, and I knew where they kept their like birth table, which had a scalpel on it. And I contemplated cutting her out. That's how much pain and craziness I was feeling at that point. And I legit contemplated how I could get her out of me because I could not wait. I was in transition, obviously, with a straight OP baby. And I had her, thank God. But if she hadn't been my fifth baby, I would have ended up in the OR at that point because I would have not have been able to push her out quickly, you know?
I didn't know, like, until I joined this group and we started chatting about OP babies, like, it was so validating because I haven't had a vaginal birth before or since. And so I just didn't know, like, okay, yeah, I was in a lot of pain. That was painful.
When I have a patient, I know that their baby is OP, and I assess my patient right when they get there. And I look at all the signs. There's very clear cut signs, like the shape of your belly. Mm-hmm. With an OP baby, it kind of comes in and goes in a little in the middle. The contraction patterns. A lot of times when you have an OP baby, you're going to double up contractions. You may have two peaks to one contraction. You're going to have a really weird labor pattern. Like, it's not going to follow the rules.
So validating.
Yeah. So when I have a patient, you guys, I kid you not, my knees get weak. When I realize, the moment I realize, like, my knees go weak because I delivered a straight OP with no medication and no help. And it was the most excruciating pain I've ever felt. Had I known what I know now, and had my nurse known something, she was a brand new labor nurse. She came from NICU. She knew nothing. And the funny part of my labor, though, is she sat me on a chair. We were face to face, and she was like, I mean, she tried everything she could comfort wise, but she did not know what to do. I should have been crawling around on my hands and knees. I should have been doing the things. But every time my contraction would grip me, the pain was so excruciating that I would fall face first into her crotch. And I could not move. And like, I knew I was there. And then we never talked about it until I started working there as a labor nurse. And one night during the middle of the night, her and I, she had gone back to the NICU, thank God. But we had a conversation and we laughed so hard because my contractions were coming so quick that it wasn't, and it wasn't like she could get up and leave. She was helping me, but it was like, oh God, it was so bad. But anyway, yeah, I need to get going. I have an appointment, but you guys, like, reach out to me if you need anything. Next week, our happy hour is at 6:30 PM, whatever time zone that is for you guys. Everything's usually Central Standard Time. If you see a really weird time and you're like, that's not normal, let me know, because one of my assistants lives in the UK and one in the Philippines. So every once in a while, the system, like one time we had all of these happy hours scheduled at like 1 a.m. No, that's not happening. So if you see a weird time, let me know. And I think Taylor has a creating your birth space workshop scheduled for this week. Her client, one of her doula clients, is now potentially being induced that day. So I think she's going to record it and then I'll come on and we'll play it and then we can chat about it. All right, you guys, have a great week. Bye.